Okay, we're going to get underway. Welcome to Jerusalem at the Boiling Point. What's behind the latest violence in the city? I want to say hello to everyone in the US, Israel, Palestine, other places in the world, folks on Zoom, folks on Facebook Live. This is the latest installment in the Conversations with Israel and Palestine series of Partners for Progressive Israel. Conversations is a series of informational webinars that bring voices from Israel and Palestine to an American and international audience, and it provides an important link between progressives in the Middle East and those in the US and around the world. My name is Ron Skolnick. I organize these webinars on behalf of Partners for Progressive Israel, and I'll also be your moderator today. Before we get underway, let me note, Partners for Progressive Israel is an American not-for-profit. It's dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between Israel and all its neighbors, and that includes an end to Israel's occupation based upon a two-state solution. Partners supports Israelis working to ensure social justice, civil rights, and equality for all of Israel's inhabitants, and especially those Israelis and Palestinians who are cultivating essential Jewish-Arab partnerships. Partners for Progressive Israel seeks to deepen Americans' understanding of Israel's complexities so they can better advocate for a progressive Israeli future. Now, Partners for Progressive Israel is glad to be bringing this webinar for free, but if you like it and you like more programming like this, please visit progressiveisrael.org and make a contribution if that's within your means. Now, before I introduce today's panelists, I'll just say that our first 40 minutes or so is going to be our panelists' presentations and their point of view that they're going to be presenting. And then we're going to shift over that to questions from the audience that our panelists will answer for the last 20 or so. I encourage you, even now, if you have questions, type them in at any time. Look at the bottom of your screen. Everyone's familiar now with Zoom, where it says Q&A. Sometimes you need to touch your screen or run your mouse over it. Click on the Q&A icon. That's where we're looking at questions, not so much in the chat. And type in your questions there. The webinar won't be disrupted or interfered with in any way. And note that viewers' microphones are turned off, so the only way you can get questions is going to be typing it in the Q&A. So let me introduce our panelists. I'll do it in the order of their presentation. Hagit Ofran works at the Settlement Watch Project of the Israeli peace movement, Peace Now, Shalom Achshav, which is the longest standing Israeli movement that advocates for peace. Hagit is widely recognized as one of Israel's foremost experts on a full range of issues related to West Bank settlements and settlement-related developments in East Jerusalem, and I can attest to that from personal experience. Settlement Watch serves as a resource for Israeli politicians, diplomats, international media organizations, and first and foremost, the Israeli public. Hagit has been named one of Israel's 66 Israeli women you should know by Haaretz, a list of women who break barriers, defy stereotypes, and wield influence. Yonatan Yoni Mizrahi is the director of Emek Shaveh. Emek Shaveh is an Israeli nonprofit that works to ensure that historic sites are used to build bridges between Israelis and Palestinians rather than deepen divisions. Yonatan holds an MA in archaeology from Hebrew University, and he's worked as an archaeologist with the Israel Antiquities Authority in both East and West Jerusalem and participated in excavations in the area. In 2006, he published People of the Wall, a book about his experiences as an archaeological supervisor along the route of Jerusalem separation barrier. And in 2009, he founded Emek Shaveh to challenge the political use of archaeology and historic narrative. And he served as Emek Shaveh's executive director ever since. Last and certainly not least, Muhammad Adnati has worked for many years as a field worker for various human rights organizations. He was previously with Yesh Din, and he currently works with Emek Shaveh and the ACRI, the Association for Civil Rights in Israel. Muhannad lives in Kfar Aqab, neighborhood of East Jerusalem. So I'm going to hand it over at this stage to Hagit, and we'll get our discussion started. Thanks to everyone for joining.
Thank you very much, Ron. Thank you for having us and
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, sorry, Hagit, I tripped you up. I was going to say a few words of introduction to lead you in, and I forgot those. So I'll just say very briefly, I just wanted to say that, everyone knows that we all pay attention to the big headlines. Did Netanyahu get to form a government, or who wins elections? A lot of what matters, a lot of what influences events is happening on the ground day to day. But we don't hear about it a lot until it boils over into violence. And unfortunately, it too often does. And Jerusalem is a place that we've seen tension, and we hope it doesn't get worse. But we need to take a look at and dig a little deeper at what's happening so that the situation can be addressed both by Israelis and Palestinians and by the international community. And that's what we're doing here today. In recent weeks, folks might have heard about the clashes between the Israeli police and Palestinians at Sheikh Jarrah, when the Israeli police set up barricades and blocked access to a prominent location for celebration during Ramadan. And thankfully, those barricades were removed a couple of weeks ago, at least in the meantime, allowing tensions to ease. Less noticed in the press in recent weeks have been a series of evictions. In fact, tomorrow, I believe, Israel's high court is going to rule on whether families in Sheikh Jarrah can appeal their eviction, or whether they're going to be displaced from their homes of decades. And similar evictions are happening in the Silwan neighborhood, with also possibilities of demolitions by the municipality of Jerusalem. So there's a lot of violence, there's a lot of potential for violence, and there's a lot of things going on down on the ground, in the bureaucratic sphere, in the legal sphere, and that's what we're here to learn about today. So having said those words, I'm going to hand it over to Chavita.
So thank you very much again. Thank you for arranging this. It's, you know, the last few days, I think I got more phone calls from journalists than I got for the whole last year. And that's because of things that are happening in Jerusalem. That's because, unfortunately, that's because the violence is in the streets, and people are hearing more about what's going on. I'm saying it's unfortunate because I would wish that those issues of the situation in Jerusalem, in West Bank, in Israel in general, in occupied territories, would be on the agenda of the world, of Israelis. However, sometimes it only gets to the agenda when violence breaks out. So I think what the three of us will try to do tonight, which is afternoon for you, try to understand a little bit the background of all this and what it's about. And for that, I would like to give you a short introduction of the geopolitical. Oh, I think I'm not showing you the right thing. Just a minute. Why is this? Let's do that. That's a minute. Do you see now the first, like the slide of a map? Yeah? Okay, sorry for that. This is a map of Jerusalem, how it was after 48, after the establishment of the State of Israel. You can see here the green line in green, which was the border between Israel and Jordan. And you can see that the old city and the holy places were on the Jordanian side. The blue is West Jerusalem, the Israeli Jerusalem, and the brown are Palestinian areas and Jordan that were under Jordan. And in 67, as you know, Israel occupied all the West Bank, and unlike the West Bank that was never annexed officially to Israel, in 67 Israel annexed East Jerusalem, or this line in red that was annexed to Jerusalem, including all the Palestinian villages and neighborhoods that you see in brown here. And there were around 70,000 Palestinians at the time that found themselves suddenly under Israeli rule, and the Israeli authorities gave them permanent residency of Israel, meaning that they are not citizens, they are residents, which means they have the right to live in Israel, to work in Israel, to pay taxes, to get services, or at least they're supposed to get services, and but they cannot vote for the Knesset, to the Israeli parliament. They can vote for the municipality of Jerusalem, but not to the parliament. They don't have an Israeli passport. And most importantly, the status of residency is something that can be taken from you in some circumstances, not like citizenship, which poses a constant threat on the Palestinians in East Jerusalem, saying you are not the landlords here, and you are under all the time under a question mark whether we will allow you to be part of us. But Israel called it the United City of Jerusalem, that will never be divided, and started to build settlements in East Jerusalem in order to make sure that East Jerusalem will not be a part of the future Palestinian state. And those settlements, now you can see them here in blue, are the neighborhoods of East Jerusalem, like Pisgat Ze'ev, Neve Yaakov, Ramot, Gilo, if you heard those names. And so this is one kind of settlement that we have in East Jerusalem. Today there are around 220,000 Israelis living in East Jerusalem. A second kind of settlement is settlement inside Palestinian neighborhoods. This is a map of the area of the Old City. All the browns are the Palestinian neighborhoods surrounding the Old City, and all the red dots and stars are settlements inside Palestinian neighborhoods. We have the Old City, Silwan, Wadi Khilwe, Batan El Hawa, Ras El Amud, Mount of Olives, Suwane, Sheikh Jarrah. It's like a ring around the Old City that the settlers are trying to achieve in order, again, to prevent the possibility that the Palestinian neighborhoods will become part of a Palestinian state or a Palestinian capital. And when in the future we will get to negotiate the peace deal, and the Palestinians will say Silwan is Palestinian, should be part of Palestine, Israel will say, well, it's full of with Jews, it's not Palestinian, it's Jewish or Israeli. So that's their effort to make those neighborhoods more Jewish, more Israeli, etc. And I would say in brackets, I will not go into it right now, but the third kind of settlement is that settlement, what we call the touristic settlement, or the invisible settlement. Many, many developments for tourism and archaeology around and in the Old City that is meant to change the public domain in this area and to make it more Israeli and to connect the Israeli public more to it. Now in the headlines, all the phone calls that I got this week are about Sheikh Jarrah, and I would also like to refer to Batan El Hawa, which is in Silwan, which I believe are part of the background of the violence that we hear about. There is a threat here of eviction of many, many Palestinians. And just to give you an idea of how it looks like a settlement inside Palestinian neighborhood, here's a picture of a house, and you can see it's with a flag of Israel and guards on the roof, surrounded with Palestinian neighbors. This is how they look like. And whenever the family would be evicted and if settlers would go in, it will be like a military operation. This picture is from Silwan, from the Siam family that was evicted 2 years ago. And here's a picture of some of the people of the Batan El Hawa neighborhood. All of the people that you see in this picture are under threat of being evicted from their homes, or maybe better to call it displaced, because and you can see, and it's only few of the Palestinians that are under threat of being evicted in Batan El Hawa. We're talking about around 700 people. And in Sheikh Jarrah, there are another 300 or so. This is Batan El Hawa houses. Settlers managed already to take these houses, and almost all of the houses that you see in the picture are in court cases now to be evicted. This is an aerial photo of Sheikh Jarrah. All the red houses are in proceedings of evictions by settlers who are trying to kick the families out. The blues are already settlements. This is how it looks like. All this area, these houses, are under threat of being evicted. And the basis for all of those eviction lawsuits is the claim that before 1948, the land was owned by Jews, and now they are reclaiming it and saying it is ours, you're sitting on our land, and therefore you should be kicked out. And unfortunately, according to the Israeli law, this is what the law says, that the properties go back to the owner of before 48. However, this law is only applying in East Jerusalem, and it's only relevant for properties of Israelis. Many other people lost their properties in 48 in Israel, but they were Palestinians, and for them there we have another law, which is the absentee property law, that will not allow their return. So I will maybe talk to you in more details about it, but I will now allow Yonatan to continue, and then we'll continue about what I had to say.
Okay. So thank you, Hagit, and obviously thank you, Ron, and Dennis, and everybody who are organizing this event, and obviously inviting us today. So I'm going to speak very much about, I'm going to do also a share screen and to have a presentation. And I'm going to speak about more details about the old city, or the area of the old city. Jerusalem at the boiling point, the old city, and a bit about the Temple Mount Harmon Sharif, which I think it's very much connected to what Hagit just mentioned. We are talking about the same areas of what we are calling the historic base. So we saw before the pictures of the map of Jerusalem, the historic basin of Jerusalem, and also the old city, with the map and the locations of the settlers' houses, and so on. There are also a lot of touristic archaeological projects that are taking place in the old city. Around the temple, if this is the Temple Mount Haram al-Sharif, which is the core of the conflict in many ways, so you see there are a lot of archaeological excavations taking place here. There's also a lot of tunnels, a lot of underground excavation taking place just next to the wall of the old city, of the Temple Mount, which is always raised tension, which is endless tension about what kind of tunnel is done here, to whom, what is the benefit of this tunnel, is it going under the Temple Mount or not? There's always a tension between the Israelis and the Palestinians about that. We're having a lot of development here in Silwan, not just of taking over houses, like Hagit mentioned, also of a tourism, development tourism here, and emphasizing all the time, mainly the Jewish history or the Israeli history. And the last clashes actually were in this area, which is Damascus Gate. This is Damascus Gate, and that's where the last clashes were before. This is also the Muslim quarter, you can understand. This is the Jewish quarter, the Muslim quarter, so you can see that most of the people actually, most of the Palestinians going from the north to the Muslim quarter. Damascus Gate, as you can see here, which is a 3-year-old map, it has a lot of development, also all kind of tourism development, like a Roman Plaza Museum, which exists in this area. In the last few years, Israel did all kind of step, like removal of the vendors. And the year after that, that was happening in 2018. And then in 2019, Israel decided to call this area in a new name, this plaza in a new name. The last clashes that we heard in the last few weeks were because the police decided to prevent from people to sit on the stones that you can see here, actually, which is a kind of a very important meeting place. And suddenly the police decided to prevent it. What is happening in Damascus Gate is very relevant, and in Silwan is very relevant to what I said before. It's about the Temple Mount Haram al-Sharif, which we see also more and more tension, or more and more trying to change the status quo in general in the Temple Mount Haram al-Sharif. Now, I'm not the expert about the Temple Mount Haram al-Sharif, I'm just following what happened there from time to time. And for example, in the last Passover, which was last month, was in March, this March, it was the first time that I remember, at least, that the Israeli police allowed Jews to go up to the temple, to the Haram al-Sharif, the temple, and to say prayers. You can see here the people, some of them going with their smartphone, but actually, like I always say, they are not checking text messages, they're actually reading prayers, which is kind of violating and another step in the way how the settlers organization or the Free Temple Movement organization in general, there are different organizations trying kind of to have more present and more legitimation that they having rights to pray in this Temple Mount Haram al-Sharif, which in many ways, many times also provoking the very delicate status quo of the of Jerusalem in general. What happening here is very relevant to what happening in other places. What I would like to do from here in order to explain how they are all connected, how I think that what happening in one hand in Temple Mount, Silwan, Sheikh Jarrah, like Hagit said, Damascus Gate, I would like to share with you a video of about 7 minutes, and then maybe to wrap up everything about how we understand the situation. So again, it will take me a second to show the video. And before I'm playing the video, I just want to say that if there are any voices problem, I'm apologizing in advance. We did it in the last few days, and sometimes the recording is not proper, but there are, anyway, there are subtitles. So, you can see everything from the subtitles, read everything in subtitles, and I will do kind of a summary after that.
And Yoni, I'll just say before you start, if folks want to type in their questions, they can do so now while they're watching the video, and we'll, go ahead.
Okay.
Here we are. At Damascus Gate, behind me you can see the gate itself. We are at the plaza in front of the gate. Damascus Gate is actually the central gate for the Palestinians to enter the old city. It actually connects between the business center of Jerusalem, which is known as Salah ad-Din and other areas, and connect to the market of the old city, to the Haram al-Sharif Temple Mount. This is one of the gates that leads to the Temple Mount Haram al-Sharif. There are also other gates, but it's definitely the main gate that leads to the market. You can see that in the morning, a lot of products being brought inside. Damascus Gate is also kind of a meeting place. Usually, Palestinians used to meet or to set up meetings in this place during the month of the Ramadan. It's occupied with lots of youth mainly. not necessarily religious people, just youth who are coming in the evening, what is called to see and to be seen. And it's just a place that people used to meet, also beyond the Ramadan. Damascus Gate is actually has three different names in three different languages. We call it Damascus Gate in English because it's the gate that used to lead to the north, to Damascus more or less. In Arabic, it's called Bab al-Amud, which means the gate of the column, which preserve a very ancient, traditional ancient understanding that this is the gate that in the past, probably in the Roman period, there used to be a very tall pillar that stood inside the gate. In Hebrew, it's called Shaar Shrem, Nablus Gate, because it's the gate that leads to Nablus. So this is actually the three names of the gate. Historically, when we are talking about the gate, archaeologists excavated here in the 20th century and they discovered the original gate from the Roman period. You can see one of the entrances. It used to be like a triple gate, which a central arch and two smaller arches. What we are looking at is now actually the small arch. This gate is dated to the second century, the Roman period, where if we mention that the pillar that we mentioned before, the Roman built inside, and it probably marked the border of Jerusalem back then, which also shows that Damascus Gate preserved the location of Jerusalem and the border of Jerusalem for almost 2,000 years, or actually 2,000 years now. And this tradition continues, although cultures, religions, and rulers changed all the time. So let's walk inside to see why it's so tense, I think, why both sides are very much interesting in this place. And later on, we're going to see how it's all connected to the surrounding area, to the touristic project, and how some of the touristic projects are actually, in many ways, maybe challenging the Palestinian character of East Jerusalem. And this is the main road, or the main street, how it was built during the Roman period, like I said, second century, but even later, which the Roman thinking in building cities was to build one or two, mainly two main streets. One is the Comanus and one is the Cardo. We are walking in what's supposed to be the Cardo, the street that goes from the south to the north, or from the north to the south, the Valley Street, which goes here, that was planned and was built by the Romans. And the character of Jerusalem still keeps its Roman structure, which is very interesting. And we see it in many old cities, by the way, in all over the ancient world where Romans ruled. This is the street that leads straight to the Temple Mount Haram al-Sharif, also to the Western Wall. And it's also a street that since the 70s of the 20th century, there's a lot of interest by Israeli settlers, group of Israelis who believe that East Jerusalem should be in the Israeli hands, people who believing that they should settle in a Palestinian neighborhood and create what we're calling a Jewish character to the city. Those settlers' organization began settling in the old city already in the 70s. And by taking houses one by one, or by claiming that in some of the houses Jewish people used to live before 1948 or even before that, and so on. And actually until today, this street is very tense because although it's a very Palestinian street, it's also a street that in some places we can see all kind of settlers' houses. We can see here one of the main or the first houses that were taken by settlers, but actually was taken by, was bought by Ariel Sharon in the late 80s. Today it's operated by a settlers organization called Ateret Kohanim. Another interesting structure we can see from here, the flags, the Israeli flags over there. This is actually the beginning of the settlement of the Muslim Quarter in the late 70s, if I'm not mistaken. And today it's kind of yeshiva. So it's actually a street that we are trying to kind of to Judaize it, or to make it more accessible to Israelis, to Jewish people. This is a place that you can see more and more prayers, including Israeli prayers, going to the Western Wall And so this is actually the street that we see more and more prayers going. Obviously, Muslim prayers, but also more and more Israeli prayers, Jewish prayers going to the Western Wall or maybe to the Temple Mount Haram al-Sharif. In 2015, there were a lot of violence, actually in this street exactly, in Al-Wat Street. In the Ramadan of 2021, which was April 2021 actually, most of the clashes were actually around the plaza, because according to our understanding, we see how step by step, in one hand, we're having the settlers who are trying to Judaize the street and this area, and there are a lot of plans to make it more accessible to Israelis in general. That we just go up and out of the plaza, we are in kind of a prime location of East Jerusalem. In the minute that we leave the gate and we go to the east, we can see the old center of Jerusalem.
I'm planning to stop here. It just was kind of a way that in the video, I think you can see, we try to show how everything is very close. And it's a lot of tension about any small change, like if people can see it or not see it, sometimes who is walking in the streets. And according to our understanding, there's kind of a struggle over the Damascus Gate, but it very much leads to what is happening in Al-Wat Street, and it very much leads to what, or connected to what is happening, I think, in the Temple Mount, all kind of a one surrounding. So sometimes when you're having a pressure somewhere, I mean, sometimes the explosion goes out in different places, but they're all, according to our understanding, to my understanding, let's say, they're all connected. So that's actually my short explanation, and now I can hand over the floor to Mohanad.
So, Mohanad, do you want to take us through your perspective as both a human rights worker and as a Palestinian in East Jerusalem about the latest developments, relations with the Israeli police, and you know, your perspective in general?
Okay, thank you, Ron, and thank you, everybody, for having us for this very interesting evening. I prefer to talk, first of all, about myself. I am a Palestinian East Jerusalem residents. I live at a neighborhood which is called Kfar Aqab. Kfar Aqab, it's a Palestinian neighborhood that belongs to the East Jerusalem or to Jerusalem municipality, but it's out of the border. Every day I go through a checkpoint at Kalandia checkpoint to enter Jerusalem. Also, I have an Israeli ID card because the world separation took us out of East Jerusalem, and the Israeli government put a wall, a separation wall surrounding our neighborhood. And my wife, for example, is a Palestinian resident that have a green blue. I have a green ID. I have a blue ID that mean East Jerusalem or Jerusalem ID. My wife have a green ID that is that's meaning that she is belongs to the Palestinian Authority, and if she want to keep going and live in East Jerusalem, she must every year go to the Minister of Interior to have a special permission can let her stay in this Jerusalem. My children have like me and blue ID, an Israeli ID, and I can't let my wife have such me an Israeli ID because the Israeli law didn't allow a Palestinian to have an Israeli ID. There is a the court forbid us to do that. So this background is very important to me to say that East Jerusalem is very interesting part of Jerusalem, and it's very in the same time it's very complicated. For example, as Hagit and Jonathan try to explain, Damascus Gate is a central of East Jerusalem. Not for the Palestinian East Jerusalem people, but also for all the Palestinian at the West Bank, because in the past, this year, the Israeli side didn't allow Palestinian to enter Jerusalem in the Ramadan month to go to the Al-Aqsa Mosque to pray because the Israeli side say the Palestinians have the problem of Corona. So they didn't give the Palestinian from the West Bank permission to enter Jerusalem. But in general, in the past, before the Corona, most of the Palestinian came to Jerusalem through the Damascus Gate. All the East Jerusalem transportation is located near the Damascus Gate. So because the clashes in the last two or three weeks and the situation at the Damascus Gate, it's not only an issue of East Jerusalem people, it's an issue for all the Palestinian people. And you can see that in the last 3 months, the clashes also was going on also in the West Bank most of the cities of the West Bank. There was a clash with the Israeli army. So it's mean that the people of East Jerusalem and the people of the West Bank are very, they have the same issue and they have the same thing when they go to the army, to the Israeli army. The situation in the Damascus Gate was because, as Jonathan tried to say, the head commander of the police decided to close all the area for the Palestinian families. In general, Ramadan month is a very festival month. It's not only a fast month, it's also a very festival months, especially in the nights. Most of the Palestinian family used to came to the Damascus Gate and to the plaza and have the lunch of the breaking of the fast there, and also very young people also came there and dancing or having dabka, Palestinian culture dancing, and do a lot of culture and social activities. But I don't know why the Israeli side make this very wrong discussion in this time. There is no reason for the Israeli police to do it, because in general, the situation there is very quiet and all the people are do what they don't want, and most of them are all the time try to make festivals and good nights. After that, you see that also the other problem, that most of the people that staying there or coming to the festival of Ramadan in the Damascus Gate are young people. And you know, now the new media and the social media is very spread in the West, the East, in East Jerusalem. So you see in the two, three weeks, most of the young talk in the culture in the social media and go to demonstrate, and there was a very violent clashes from the border police or from the police. And you can see also in the video that Jonathan let us to see, there is three watchtower from the that belong to the border police in the plaza and in the stairs that going to the old city. In this watchtower, there was a very tough violence from the border police, and I by myself I also work with the ACRI and work with the Emek Shri. But I go last 3 days to see this watchtower. There is no camera. There is no camera in this tower. They put Palestinian and beat them and use very very tough violence against them, and nobody can see what happened in these towers only from outside. If the Israeli side want to be doing his job according to the law, they must put a camera in this watchtower there that, as I say, we see a lot of videos that the Israeli border have violence against Palestinian people, and the Palestinian people have no way to defend themselves. Also, they in the past they go to make a complaint, but I know that most of the Palestinian people upset of making complaint against the violence that they are facing. Also, the last 3 days, I see a very very bad and very very hard violence in Sheikh Jarrah, because you know there is now a peace demonstration at Sheikh Jarrah against the evacuation of the houses there, and also the young people from East Jerusalem go there to make a demonstration. But you see also the Israeli border police came there and beat them, and a lot of violence was happening there yesterday and the day before yesterday, and I think that also this night there will be a demonstration there. As I say, Jerusalem is very, 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 very interesting city. I don't think that the violence in this time is good also to the both sides, because most of us know that the Palestinian and the Israeli in East Jerusalem are also lives one in the another, You see that most of the Palestinian people are working at the west of Jerusalem, and most of the hospitals, there are doctors and many people working in the markets and in the infrastructure and also the things of East Jerusalem. So because if the situation now going like the two people are living one with the other, I think somebody want to stop this, and by violence want to make them not to live with one together also, but to have a problem one with the other. It's not good. I think it's very important to the two sides to keep living with another. Also, most of the Palestinians want to be still living in East Jerusalem. They want to, they will not disappear, and they will not go out of East Jerusalem. So I think as I say, it's better to return to the simple and good things, not to the bad things.
Thank you, Mohammed. So the questions are piling up, and I'm going to use my prerogative. I'm going to slip in my first question, a question I'm always curious about, and it goes to the question of evictions. There are nonprofit organizations who are behind these efforts to remove Palestinian families. They say they've bought the rights from old Jewish associations from 100, 120 years ago. How much are these groups working on their own, and how much are they working in tandem on some level with the Israeli government? How much is this an extension of Israeli government policy, and how much are these sort of efforts by Jewish groups to forward their agenda, and they don't really care what the government's doing? So anyone who wants to pick that up.
It's pretty much supported by the Israeli government, and it depends on which government is in power. They will get more or less support. For the basis or the beginning of the settlement in the Muslim quarter and in Silwan by Ateret Kohanim and Elad associations was done actually as a scheme that was funded, that was orchestrated by the Israeli government authorities, by the Ministry of Housing, by the Land Authority and other Israeli bodies. This scheme was then stopped by the Rabin government, But the assistance to those associations is always there, especially to El Ad Association, which got from the government, I would say, the kingdom's jewelry, or what is most precious in our in the sites or the historical sites in Jerusalem, were given by the Israeli government to the settler organization to be in charge of what they call the City of David, to be in charge of other national parks, parts of the national park, etc., gave them a lot of power to control those sites, to determine how the public domain in those areas would look like. And we're talking about Palestinian neighborhoods that they are operating in. And also it made them easier to collect funding and legitimacy, because they are dealing with tourism, with archaeology, with Jewish history, which is something we all love. So that's the main, I think, support. But we don't have enough time to go into the details of the help that organizations specifically got from the government in order, for instance, to take over the properties in Sheikh Jarrah or in Silwan. But I can assure you that there are many places where they needed a paper from the government in order to prove that this is the land that they got. They got this paper easily. The authorities that were in charge of the land gave them the land without even talking to the Palestinians who are living there, etc., etc. And now it is coming to a big test, because in the case of Batan El Hawa and Silwan, we got to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court judge decided to ask the opinion of the Attorney General, meaning theoretically it's a civil issue between two sides that are fighting over ownership on something, but suddenly the judge says, I want to hear what the state has to say about it. And the state's attorney should give its opinion by May 31st. And this is an important point, because now the government of Israel cannot say anymore that this is a legal matter, we are not intervening in the court decisions. Suddenly, they are going to have an opinion here. And if they are going to say it's okay to displace 700 people based on a discriminatory law that allows Jews to return and not allow Palestinians to return to properties, if that's what they're going to say, it means that Israel is taking part in this crime. And I think it's now the time to raise our voices and tell the government, this is your chance to say, no, it's not okay. We shouldn't do it in the capital of our country. And these residents of Israel has the right to live, and we shouldn't throw them to the streets.
Thanks, Chagit. There's a lot of questions coming in. I'm going to group a few of them together. So there's some questions about the violence. One question is directed to Muhannad and says, Muhannad Anati spoke about a peaceful demonstration at Sheikh Jarrah, but we see on the news young demonstrators throwing rocks and fireworks at the police. What are we to believe? There was another question about whether Hamas is involved at all in what's going on the ground. And there's a, I'm trying to look my way through the questions. But that is a really good question. We read a lot of different things depending on the news outlet that you prefer. Oh, Karen Mock, I'm sorry, asked, what kind of outside interference did you see in the instigation of the violence? international press called their behavior, I assume they meant Jewish behavior, pogroms. How can we stop this type of extremist behavior? So what's, I guess the questions are there other, and one question asks about the lack of permission for Palestinian elections to take place in Jerusalem. How have all these things contributed to violence? How do these things get started? You know, who lifts the first hand? I guess people want to know. And how does it take off from there?
I think that most of the people that live here see clearly what the beginning of the last violence. The last violence of Damascus Gate start with the close of the plaza and the stairs there, and when the Israeli police try to prevent young people to sit there. But and also after that, somebody asked the police why they do it. At the beginning, they say because of the corona. After that, they say because of they want to let Palestinians go to the prayer easily. But the young people, as I say, I said in my, before that, the young people came to the stairs to the stairs to sit there, and the police prevent them, and the clashes started. I by myself, I see a lot of videos. Most of the videos, you can see that the clashes are in general peacefully, and the Palestinian try to make a crowd and came with the slogan and the flags and raise the Palestinian flag. So the border police and the police was very angry and try start to throw tear gas and bomb and also they came with the vehicle that called Maktazit that use very bad water.
Smelly water, right?
Yeah. And for example, at Sheikh Jarrah, most of the videos, you can see that most of the young people are scholar. They are not from the Hamas or from the Palestinian religion groups. Most of them are young people. You can see also a lot of women and a lot without also a hijab, or they came, you know, the religious woman put hijab in her head. Most of the girls that you can see in the videos in Sheikh Jarrah are not religious. They are from the main people, from the Palestinians, came to try to help the families that going to be a vacation from their houses. It's not the question is not who start first and who stop it. The Israeli government rule as an occupation and as a government rule is Jerusalem by herself. She can also put down the violence or do something that make the people live peacefully. And the fact that now when they put out the closure in the plaza and the Damascus Gate, there's no clashes now in the Damascus Gate. Why there is no clashes? Because they know that they make a wrong decision. And they, after that, the mayor say that he talked to the Israeli police and let them put it out. So I think it's very, as I mentioned it before, it's better to live one with other. But as Hagit tried to say, and also I want to say to the about the Israeli right wings, the right wings and the right movement at East Jerusalem that came and settled. Jerusalem want to make it. They want to take us to the one station situation. One state situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One state situation because they want to live within the Palestinian people. And after that, you can go do anyway two-state situation. It's useful. It's not useful. So I think it's better to the Israeli, and the Israeli government think that it's good to cooperate with them. I think that as I saw, they will take them to one state situation solution.
Okay, I'm gonna move on to two more questions, but two I'm gonna put together. David Abraham asks that, how widely is the intention of the Israeli government to force out a majority of Arab Jerusalemites? And I guess a related question, to the extent that the answer is yes, are there any cases, any of the cases that you've discussed today being brought to the international court? Whether on an individual basis or on a policy-wide basis?
International court is a little complicated. There is the investigation now opened in the ICC, and I know that the complaint, or at least that's what I heard, of the Palestinian Authority included the evictions in Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan as part of the crimes that are being looked at. But I think it's it's not so simple to file anything in the international court on a private basis. Of course, it's not possible, etc. So it's problematic. I did want to refer to the question of the violence and sure. I think Israel decided in 67 to unite Jerusalem and to say that it's one city forever. But on the ground, it stayed two cities. Palestinian neighborhoods and Israeli neighborhoods are not really mixed, very distinct. We have 350,000 Palestinians today, which are almost 40% of the Israeli population. But they are not part of, we never let them feel that they are the landlords in the city or that they have any, they are in different status. They are, we, the Jews in Jerusalem or the Israelis, we are citizens, they are residents. And because we are in a national conflict, and because this conflict also has religious aspects that are all centered in the old city area, in the Temple Mount, Haram al-Sharif, which is the holiest place for the Jews, and the third in holiest for the Muslims. And so, under the surface, there is always tension. And it's only a matter of a small friction that can make it go out. And you can see it very clearly in Palestinian neighborhoods that has settlements inside, that sometimes even a word that is being said from a settler to a Palestinian youngster or vice versa would become a fight, and then the police will come in and throw tear gas, and there will be clashes, and you would just small things that usually can end quietly. And of course, when you have symbols in the middle of Ramadan, and you have the threat of eviction, and you had a success of settlers to move into some houses in Silwan a few weeks before, and all that, so the violence comes up to the surface. We don't need Hamas to call it. It's not organized. Israel managed to break down all Palestinian leadership in East Jerusalem. The Palestinian Authority cannot even fund a small festival for the kids in East Jerusalem because Israel will close it down because the Palestinian Authority is not allowed in East Jerusalem. Local community leaders are being all the time chased by the authorities. It's very hard to organize. And I think it's also a problem for us now, because if you want to ease the flames, you don't have now any leadership on the Palestinian side that can put the flames down. And another very important phenomenon that we are seeing now, also Israeli youngsters using violence. So we have like a civil kind of street fights which are very ugly and very, very problematic, that all the hatred and the racism is like coming to the surface. So it's much, and saying it was peaceful, but it's the police, I think, yes, sometimes the police is responsible to the high violence, sometimes not. But you can see, like in Isawiya, for instance, a Palestinian neighborhood in East Jerusalem, that whenever the police would come every night there, there will be clashes, horrible clashes, a lot of injuries. But then in the night that the police is not there, suddenly everything is quiet.
I know we're reaching about an hour. Do you guys have time for a couple of more questions? We still have a bunch, and I know it's 10 o'clock by you, but do you have a little bit more time? So Chagit, I just got we got a sort of follow up on what you just said from someone who's anonymous, but said that you said that Jerusalem Arabs are not citizens. Weren't Arab residents of Jerusalem given the option of receiving Israeli citizenship? So if you could clarify what, you know.
I don't know exactly. In general, they were not offered citizenship, except for probably a few places. But even if they did, we're talking about 1967, few days after the war, people don't know what will happen with them. And if they would have taken Israeli citizenship, they would lose their status in Jordan and in all Arab countries. And they didn't know that it's going to last for 54 years. And another very important thing, today, according to the Israeli law, you can get citizenship. There is a process to become a citizen of Israel. However, the vast majority of the Palestinians in East Jerusalem do not wish to do it. There were only about 10,000 or 15,000 since 1967 that got the citizenship, and maybe a similar number that tried and were denied, but that's all. The majority of the Palestinians don't want to be citizens of Israel. They don't see themselves as part of Israel. They don't want it.
And I'm going to ask a couple of questions that are connected. One is just to clarify, the Lois Brown asks about the legal mechanism for eviction of Palestinians. I know you touched on it, but I guess, you know, it's a little bit in the weeds. And the other is a question from Moises Storch from Brazilian Friends of Peace Now regarding whether there's involvement of Keren Kayemet, KKL, JNF in these evictions and displacements.
The Keren Kayemet is involved in one case now, the Subarin family case. I will send you a link about it. But and in the past, in many more houses in Silwan. But right now, it's the only case that is open.
And just another quick one, just to clarify. Mauro Resnick asks, how did Israel determine Jerusalem city borders after the war in 1967? A little bit of history.
There was a committee of a few military generals who offered three options. And of course, the government chose the middle one. There were bigger borders, smaller borders, and they took the middle.
Okay, I think we're going to, there's still, so here's a question also for Maura, which is really interesting. If Palestinians, because I know this came up in the recent municipal elections in Jerusalem in 2018, she asked, if Palestinians in East Jerusalem voted in large numbers in municipal elections, could this make a difference? We actually did the first in this series of conversations, we talked with Aziza Boussara and Gershon Baskin about the question of an Arab-Jewish, Palestinian-Jewish municipal list that might be able to tip the balance. So can Palestinians, would they get involved on a municipal level and change how the city is run, and would that make a difference?
Palestinian can vote to the municipality, but there is a political decision for all the East Jerusalem, for all the Palestinian East Jerusalem not to vote to the municipality. Because I think that most of them don't feel that they are belong to the Israeli municipality politically. They want to stay in East Jerusalem as a Palestinian. And most of them think that if they vote to the municipality, they will give it the legitimacy to stay and control them. Because I think that also the most of the Palestinians want a Palestinian state, but not to go out from East Jerusalem. They want to stay at East Jerusalem. It's complicated also.
Yeah, they want to live there. They don't accept Israel's
rule there. It's very complicated. Honestly, most of the people ask me all the time, why didn't you vote to the Israeli municipality? Most of them, they want us as a Palestinian to resolve the problem for the left wing at Jerusalem, upon our back. But it's very complicated, as I told you. Very complicated.
Okay. I don't want to hold you much longer. So we're going to start wrapping this up. If each of you would just like to take a minute and just, I guess, tell the audience maybe like one thing you'd like them to remember out of this whole discussion or that they can do moving forward, I think that would, folks would appreciate that. So you want to do the same order? Chagit, you want to start, and then Yoni, and then Muhannad? Just a quick wrap up if you have anything that you want to.
I urge you, or I ask you, to speak out, to share on the media, to call your representatives or whatever you can, to put the spotlight on things that are going on in Jerusalem, to try to prevent this mass displacement in this Jerusalem, and also, don't give up on us. Don't give up and become also despaired that we cannot resolve this conflict, because we can. And I believe that Israelis and Palestinians can live together, but they need to do it after we end this occupation. Only this way we will have peace.
Thanks, Chagit. Yonatan?
Yeah, I just like to say that many things happening in Jerusalem all the time. Sometimes it goes to the news because of the violence and the clashes. But like maybe it was said before, I mean, there are many things that happening during the days, like the quiet days, especially when it goes with tourism and things like that. And I think that Jerusalem is definitely a unique city, or maybe complicated city. And what is needed is always to open your eyes and to understand that many times things are not as it seems. And when you're going, for example, to a place like City of David, you're not just a tourist, you're also supporting the occupation, if you like it or not. The behavior of the police, like Mohammed said before, is like, is it really to protect order, or it's something like that? And I think that's something that, unfortunately, when it comes to Jerusalem, we always have to be, to challenge this kind of questions. Also, what the official says.
Thank you, Yoni.
I want also to end this evening also an optimistic view. I think it's in our hands to make that change. the two sides will not disappear, as I mentioned. The two sides will stay in Jerusalem, and I think it's better to live in peaceful way. And I think it's in our hands to make the change, and also to talk about the situation in East Jerusalem and in general. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone who's been watching. Thank you to our panelists, Chagit Efron, Yonatan Mizrahi, Muhammad Anati. Thank you to Emek Shaveh and Peace Now, Shalom Achshav, and please follow them, contribute, support their work. They do really important work. And a special shout out to Talia Ezrahi of Emek Shaveh, who behind the scenes really got this whole thing together over this past few days. Thanks to Dinesh and Julia, Partners for Progressive Israel, in making this happen. We really hope you enjoyed this webinar. We try to explore things, give you a little bit more depth and get you behind the headlines. And we're glad to bring you this program for free. If you want to learn more about upcoming programming, please visit progressiveisrael.org. And while you're there, please be our guest and make a contribution. That's what enables us to bring programs like this to you at no cost. So thanks, everyone. Stay safe, and speaking personally, get vaccinated. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ron, obviously, and for Progressive Israel, obviously, for arranging that as well. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.